airchecks.com.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Jarrell Mace, otherwise known as Jay Mace from the Time Machine on WUAG 103.1 FM, playing the best in old school hip-hop, R&B, and everything else in between. With me on the phone right now, I have Steve West, creator and founder of the radio website airchecks.com. Mr. West, welcome to the Time Machine.
Well, thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to do this interview with me.
Oh, no, it's no problem at all. The schedule is every day I put something up, seems like, or I'm always working on the site. But classic radio is just a very important thing to me. So.
And we're going to get into that with this interview. Now, to start it off, when did you first fall in love with radio?
Oh, my goodness. That's a really good question. I fell in love with radio probably in my early teens. I'll be honest with you, it's kind of a neat story. 1976, my mom gave me a radio and a cassette recorder for Christmas. Now, I know this is really going back a ways, but that set me on a course because, you know, I didn't know what I was going to record. First, I put a mic up to the TV and started recording Red Sox baseball. But, you know, that was, okay, that was fun. But I really started listening to the radio and found something really neat to record. My mom always listened to WBZ, which at the time was the biggest music station in New England. And it, of course, the other station, WRKO in Boston, was really known as the Big Top 40, but I couldn't get it where I was from. It was just too far away. So I started listening to that, and then having this recorder, I would listen at night, and all these great top 40 stations would come in. WKBW, WABC, WLS. It just grew on me. I just thought it was the coolest thing. I mean, these DJs were so entertaining. They'd make me laugh. They'd make me cry. The music was great. So that kind of went along, and sometime around 1978, I just started keeping some of these tapes. I wish most of them I still had, but I've lost them over the years. That's how it all started. Just a healthy love for what I was hearing. It was magical. I got to tell you, one of the magic things was you could get all these stations from so faraway cities, and it was because it was on AM, and I could hear things that I could never hear in my home market. It was great.
Yeah, I bet it was. And now, what did you do to get your foot in the door?
Well, probably a different way than most people do today. I was sitting around the table New Year's Day 1980, and I can remember having this discussion with my mom. What are you going to do with yourself? You're getting to that age. You ought to start thinking about it. I guess I was 16. And she said, well, why don't you go down to the local radio station and see if they'll put you on the air, and you know, maybe you could learn something. You love radio, that's all you do is listen to the radio. And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I said, you know, Mom, that's a really good idea. Now, understand this, at 16, I was introverted, I was one of these guys that was scared to go on stage, so this is a huge deal to me. Wow, I could be a DJ? It was kind of intriguing, but I was scared to death. I went down to that radio station, and the next day, because, you know, New Year's Day, nobody was there. It happened to be a Monday, as I recall. I went down, and I talked to the owner. Guy's name was Dick Partridge. His claim to fame was having been on WNEW in New York, working with guys like Ted Brown and Mark Simone and all those. He was also the national voice of Lucky Strike Cigarettes back in the 60s, before they banned cigarette advertising. So he had been around radio for a long, long time. And, you know, he allowed me to come in and put records away and watch the DJs. This went on for 9 months. They finally allowed me on the air with one of the DJs Thanksgiving Day, 1980. I will never forget this day. I sat down in that air chair. My hands were shaking like a leaf as I was hitting these old cart machine buttons. I swear, I must have been the worst disc jockey ever to go on the air. It was amazing.
So you were sweating bullets.
Oh, yeah, I was sweating bullets. Oh, yeah. And back in those days, we radio had not really evolved. The CDs weren't around yet. The way we actually did our music was records, 45s and albums. We didn't even cart our music. Every now and then, there was a few songs that the program director, you know, he had the music and we didn't, and he would put those on a cart. But most of our music was queued up, Q-burned 45s. And nobody understands what a Q-burned 45 is today, but basically when you queued up records for long enough, you would get this sound when it stopped. started. And so we played those, and all our commercials were on carts. And at this station, the DJ did all the commercials live, except for the few that were carted up. We did the news, the weather, the sports, and you played disc jockey. You did everything. And it was really trial by fire. You learned by doing. No better teacher in the whole world. I mean, it was just, it really was a different era.
Yeah, I can definitely relate because some of the equipment we have here, we operate on denim carts, turntables, and actually in the production room, we have a reel-to-reel machine just sitting there, and I'm like, thank God for Adobe Audition.
Yes, Adobe helps quite a bit. It's a lot easier than splicing tape, cutting it with a razor blade, and putting it together with a little Scotch tape. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about if you've got that old equipment in there. Used to be back in the day when people would edit their commercials, you know, doing their production, they would spend a long time producing a spot. You voiced the spot, and anytime you made a mistake, instead of recutting it from scratch, you would mark a spot with a grease pencil on the tape. Then you would take a razor blade and you would cut where you wanted to cut. You cut out the bad part. Then you take where you picked up again and you would bring it over and you would tape these together with some special tape that was the same width as these reel-to-reel tape. So it was a different era. Then you did overdubs, put the music down afterwards. I mean, it's just a different world back then. It was amazing.
Sounded like a headache. I probably couldn't do it because it was very tedious, and you really had to be precise with your cutting because if you cut the wrong part, you're screwed.
Well, yes, but you know what? I never considered it a pain. I actually enjoyed it because, you know, first off, you don't get into radio because it's tedious. We got into radio because we loved it. And so going back there was, what production, I suppose, you could call it a black art back then, because people that could do really good production, you really had to know what you were doing.
So tell me real quickly about the transitional period when the AM stations went over to FM, and now only on AM you have talk radio, weather, and like Christian stations.
Well, what I think happened, and there's a lot of different reasons why music went away from AM, but starting in the late 70s, I want to say around 1977 or so, the FM stations really started to take hold. It really didn't take off, I would say, until 79, but the beginnings of the end, I guess you could say, began around 1977 as audiences began to migrate over to FM. Part of that was because prior to that, most of the FM formats that were out there were beautiful music, classical music, and then you had a couple of underground rock stations that evolved into AOR, which was album-oriented rock, the predecessor to today's classic rock and active rock stations. Back then it was a lot more, the playlists were incredibly wide. And then in each market you'd have one or two top 40 stations that would come on the FM band. And as those came on, the audiences began to migrate over. But you know what really changed it was manufacturers found a way to make receivers that they were more sensitive and would lock onto these frequencies, because FM was very prone to multipath. I mean, it still is, but the receivers are so much better today, they're not suffering the same problems that they had back then. Also, one of the problems with AM today is that about a decade and a half ago, the FCC reduced the bandwidth of AM signals down to, 9 kilohertz today. It used to be something like 13. By doing that, it cut a lot of the audio frequency ranges out, and then music started sounding muddy. So, basically speaking, the audience migrated over to FM as the formats became more exciting, radios became better, and actually the new formats started sounding a little bit different and a little hotter than what was going on AM. And I guess that's probably the best generic explanation that I could give you. There's a lot more factors, but it would take me an hour to get into it.
Right, and real quickly, let's go into the death knell of the industry, those nice little Arbitron books where if you don't do good in your market, somebody may get cut.
Arbitron certainly has made things more competitive. There used to be a lot of other rating services. If you go back to the early 70s, the 60s, you had Pulse. That was a big one. Say WABC was rated by Pulse, and a lot of these were. Arbitron is just another ratings company that came along. Television has Nielsen. The rating services are not the one reason why radio stations have become what they are, and it's not the one reason why disc jockeys have lost their jobs. I mean, there's, you know, certainly if you're in a major market, and I'm talking top 50 markets primarily, you know, New York, Boston, Los Angeles, Chicago, Dallas, and the major cities, okay, the ratings are very important and always have been, and that is how a lot of these disc jockeys that were on were involved, how they were paid and their bonuses and whatnot, and of course if their ratings drop real bad, they lose their job. But it wasn't until the Telecommunications Act of 1996, it's a landmark date because at that point, radio owners, and I'm talking companies like Clear Channel and what was AM/FM and Incorporated and Chancellor Media, some of the companies that have merged into greater things today, they all of a sudden went from being able to own one AM and FM station and TV station in a market, and actually that it had relaxed a little bit, and so I think they could own two, but this opened the door for any entity to own up to 40% of the radio stations in any market, and the consolidation that happened was so fast that the prices for radio stations all of a sudden went through the roof. A station that would have been worth $1 million prior to that was probably worth $10 or $15 million because of how many stations were being sold and purchased. So what that did was raise the overhead. At about the same time, Wall Street investors really started demanding a profit every quarter. So what happened is, in essence, as there were more stations owned by one company, there was less competition and there was less need to create, you know, programming that was going to capture an audience, because now they could cover a wide variety of formats based upon how many radio stations that one company owned, and instead of the stations being housed in buildings and transmitters all over the city or one given market, they could move everything into one building and cut the staff in half or even by three quarters and start having the on-air talent voice track a different radio station in the cluster, maybe under a different name. And concurrently with that, all of a sudden, right around the mid-90s, we stopped having tape-based reproduction, and the computer automation systems came online that were, you know, versatile enough that they could actually do a lot of this voice tracking. And I know I'm kind of long-winded. I'm trying to give you a really decent explanation of what happened. There were so many factors that all came together at once. But I have to tell you, the real problem in this, whereas the jobs started going down and a lot of the job losses happened, really were after 2000, maybe even post 9/11. Because it really took that long for the huge amounts of debt that, you know, entities like Clear Channel and I want to say Entercom, but I think they were in the black at that point. But Clear Channel was a great example, because the debt ratio that these stations were carrying was unreal. And in order to turn a profit every quarter for the Wall Street investors, the bottom line had to drop. You couldn't cut programming, but you had to cut people. And so that's what happened. And then over time, the programming has become bland because these owners figured out that, or they thought erroneously, that audiences really didn't care about personality. It was all about music. And this is where they have really done themselves a huge disservice.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, because when I interviewed Donnie Simpson a couple of years back, he said the same thing, that PDs and the owners want to play it so safe by playing the same 10 songs in a row on XYZ, 105, whatever, and that no personality, no diversity. Because when I listened to those old air checks, especially in markets where you have rival radio stations, it was fun to hear those little pot shot commercials going at each other, and I just missed it.
Listen, let's make a distinction. Variety and diversity are two completely different things. Diversity really has more to do with minority-owned radio stations and minority-programmed radio stations where they, you know, target a specific audience. Certainly African Americans have had their own niche programming. Mexican Americans have had their own niche programming, and other ethnic groups have had theirs. I mean, there's Korean broadcasting, there's a lot of different ones. So that would be under diversity. Variety had more to do with a playlist that instead of being 200 songs, may be, you know, the top 40 hits played in a tight rotation, but a lot of oldies thrown in, people that were familiar songs that went back 10, 15 years. This is unheard of on CHR stations today, but back in the day, you could hear a lot of oldies on top 40 stations. It just does not happen today.
And for a minute in the 80s, it seemed like a bunch of radio stations adopted Mike Joseph's format, Hot Hits. He was a radio consultant, and he turned WTICS, I think it was in Hartford, Connecticut.
96 Ticks. That, you know, that's one of my all-time favorites, and not just because I've got it featured on airchecks.com. TICFM. I grew up where I could listen to some of these jocks on TICFM. It was a very personality-oriented format, yet it was very, very tight. Mike Josephs was a brilliant individual. He's a great consultant. His Hot Hits format was on a number of radio stations around the country. Basically, from about 1977, I want to say up until about 1984. You know, these trademark formats do run their course, but this was an amazing format. It featured some fusion jingles from TM Century, and it just sounded incredible. So, I mean, if you want to hear some TICFM, you can get it on AirCheck. Do a search for it under the Hartford market. But there were other stations. One of the most notables was an AM station, WFBL, out in, I want to say, Syracuse. They went by Fire 14, and this is toward the end of AM Top 40, 1979. And they were running the Hot Hits format. It just sounded amazing. They were actually on 1390. They had a tiny signal, and they did very well in the market. It was also exported down to Philadelphia, and it was the predecessor station to what is now WOGL, WMAR-FM in Baltimore, which went to Mix 106, WWMX, afterward. They had a great format. They put it together quite well. There was a bunch of these stations, and towards the middle of the early 80s, they kind of dropped the Hot Hit slogan, but they maintained the format. It just sounded great.
Some of my favorite stuff on Air Checks have been like the Air Checks from WKYS out of DC, WGCI out of Chicago, and then the CHR Radio Wars in New York with Z100, WQHT Hot 97, and WPLJ before they switched from Top 40 to another format.
Yeah, they are really good radio stations, and I think they were better back in the day. After PLJ quit, for the most part, Z100 had Top 40 all to themselves. The only CHR station for quite a while in New York. And of course, now you notice that K-Rock 92.3 has changed to now 102.3 as of last Monday. So they are now the first Top 40 or CHR station to really go up against Z100 in quite a long time. I think they're going to do fairly well.
Yeah, because Z100 is like the top dog, and along with WABC and some other prominent Top 40 stations, kind of put a shot in the arm with Top 40 radio, especially in New York. After WABC left.
You know, WABC was a story that didn't have to happen when it did. ABC went out as number two in the market. They had been beaten in 79 by what was then Disco 92, WKTU, which is now the aforementioned now, and that came along, and for whatever reason, the disco format, as much as people remember it with disdain, was so huge in 78, 79, that a lot of stations tried to compete. WABC, one of them. There's a story where WABC went disco for 1 week. Then Al Brady, the program director at the time, realized this is a big mistake. take. And we're right back to regular mainstream top 40. ABC was very, very tight. It was an amazing sounding radio station right up till about 1980. About the middle of the year, they started watering it down and going in an AC direction. It didn't have to happen. WLS out in Chicago really went in a rock direction and stayed top five up until about 1984 before they threw in the towel and started going a hybrid oldies AC mix. That was the end of them. My point being that these stations, had they not dropped the format like a hot potato and given up to FM, they could have been around until the late 80s. But here's something that I want people that are in radio to understand. On AM, when you've got an entertaining format and you've got a listener base, if you change that format to something generic like news talk and take the same syndication that's all over the country, once that audience leaves, it never comes back. Never. And that's something that a lot of these stations never understood. They could have maintained their numbers. They could have maintained their advertising base. It didn't have to happen in the early 80s. It could have gone on another 5 or 10 years.
Now, why do you think, like, back in the 80s when hip-hop and rap started coming onto the scene, especially minority-owned African-American stations pretty much were hesitant to play hip-hop or rap, or just regulated to a time slot where it wouldn't have any effect on the books?
Well, I don't think it happened that way. With more minority-owned radio stations, I want you to understand, too, 1983, I believe it was, some of the regulations were changed. In particular, a lot of frequencies were opened. They opened these frequencies because they wanted minorities to start owning radio stations. It was a great opportunity. And what happened was formats started to really fragment. Radio started to fragment into so many different sub-formats. And so hip-hop and rap, as it was evolving out of R&B, became a format that was extremely popular with the African-American community. And it wasn't that top 40 stations didn't want to play it. It was just that as things evolved, they played a wide variety of music, including rock and a couple of country crossovers, and they might hit a couple of rap songs. But for the most part, you had hip-hop stations come along that played exclusively hip-hop, just like you had stations that, and still today do, that are just rock stations. You have stations that evolved out of top 40 and became adult contemporary radio stations for the reason because they all want to cater to a niche audience. Primarily, believe it or not, young females. And I'll tell you why in a moment, but go ahead.
Yeah, because you had prominent hip-hop shows such as Mr. Magic's Rap Attack out of WBLS. Then you had the show with DJ Red Alert, Chuck Chill Out, and then Latin Rascals down at Kiss out of New York. Another funny moment on air checks that I really liked was there was a particular air check for WGCI out of Chicago with Bob Wall, rest in peace, Yvonne Daniels, rest in peace. And this was right around the time when Tom Jones was splitting time between Chicago and Dallas. And there was a point in the air check where they were playing a commercial and the cart just went dead on them in the middle of the commercial and they had to come on there and fix it.
You know, back in those days, even in the 80s, and again, this is before computers and MP3s and or whatever proprietary audio format that these automation systems use. Back in the old days, when we played cart in, for our commercials, these things, this is imperfect technology. Remember that the cart, and for your listeners that don't understand, a cart is basically an 8-track tape, if you can remember. Only instead of 8 distinct tracks, which would be 4 audio tracks split into 2 for stereo, these carts, you would put the entire audio on 1 track. It was actually quite good audio-wise, as long as the cart didn't jam. But after a while, and you know, back in the old days, Josh was allowed to smoke in the studio. This was a real problem because the playheads would gum up, the machine would gum up, these things would stop in the middle of playing, they wouldn't re-cue like they're supposed to. Any kind of problem could come along on the air, and I tell you, there were some awfully funny things that happened on some of the stations that I worked at, and I can give you some really great examples of that that had nothing to do with a cart machine. I worked at a place called M104, WFMP up in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. That's later turned into WXLO 104.5 out of Worcester, but back before they did this, they had a Harris Automation System. Automation systems had been around for quite a long time, but they were different. They had banks of reel-to-reel players and two what they called Instacart machines that you would slot about maybe 30 or 40 carts in one of these machines, and then something called a cart carousel that would rotate. So I'm on the air in the studio, and the studio would only go live as an event in the computer. Otherwise, the mics went dead. But I was on the air one night as I did the 7 to Midnight show, and one of the hits was playing Frankie and the Knockouts, Sweetheart. I remember this plain as day. This thing, all of a sudden, it stopped, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, the automation jammed. I went out of the broom closet studio I was in. I went back to where the automation was, and the entire reel was on fire. I went back with a fire extinguisher and put it out. In the meantime, after that thing cooked, I ran into the AM station, which was WFGL at the time, and I grabbed a bunch of records. I told the DJ, I said, I need the records. We had one turntable and a cart machine, and fortunately, half the music in AM was carted. So I went back, and I put some of these records, which, by the way, on the AM side, the record labels used to send these records in mono so the separation wouldn't cut half the audio off an AM signal. So I'm sitting here on a 50,000 watt FM station playing Muddy Carts and mono records after about 10 minutes of dead air while the it was a trip.
Sounds like it was something you never forget. And how long ago was that?
Oh, 1983. And something else that used to happen that doesn't happen anymore because nobody keeps there's no tapes to keep. But back in the old days, the reels, sometimes something would happen that's so funny that somebody would just keep these tapes. Or maybe I should put it a different way. These tapes were, you could put an hour and a half on here. And in the production room, people would make mistakes and they would move on. And they just keep recording and recording. And the next guy would come in and he'd just pick up and record on some more sections of tape. So after a while, you had a tape that had nothing but flub-ups. We used to call these blooper tapes, for lack of a better word. Somebody played one at our Christmas party from that station, and every jock in this station had made some kind of had gotten so frustrated. One guy was so mad he was cursing up a storm, jumping up and down, and throwing carts against the wall because he just had spent so many times rereading the commercial. Oh, those times. You don't get that anymore because everything is digital today. Nobody keeps anything.
And do you feel that radio today has gone away from localized programming to too much syndication?
It has. And I think that this has a great impact on radio listenership. I don't care what the NAB has come up with that says that radio listening is up. It really isn't. And I tell you why. What's happened, especially in the last couple of years, mainly the last 2 years, as disc jockeys and other air personalities have been fired, let go, usually it's done as a huge cost-saving move. You've got these syndicated programs like Ryan Seacrest, who's on a lot of radio stations. You've got a lot of morning shows that are syndicated. Mancow is syndicated. You've got, Bubba and Rick, I think it is, out of the Carolinas. You've got there's a bunch. Tom Joyner. These are sent out via a syndication company and either very low cost or free to any radio station that wants to pick them up. It's barter. It's free as long as you run their network commercials. This is a whole lot cheaper for a radio station to run than a local morning team. And these, when you can pick up a station in another market hearing the same thing there, and you drive to another city and you hear the same thing there, there is a vast sameness. The music stations all sound the same. The imaging on a lot of these CHR stations, I tell you who does it. On a lot of them, Jeff Berlin, who works at Kiss 108 in Boston. He just has the right young-sounding voice that happens to work. You've got the same voice on a vast majority of country stations that image those. The music is essentially the same for the same format in every market. Not only that, but you've got nights are horrible. There's almost no live personalities on after 6 o'clock. Around 7 o'clock, you've got on the AC stations, Delilah, Leah for the country music folks. John Tesh is on everywhere. And people are so bored with it. There's almost no listening in the home anymore. People are listening to their iPods. They're listening to MP3s on their computers. And that's the way radio has gone.
Because back in the day, they used to send out syndicated shows on record, like Casey Kasem's Top 40.
That is true, they did.
There's only one station in the Greensboro High Point, Winston-Salem market, WJMH, 102 Jams, that have DJs 24 hours, and it's live and local. No syndication at all.
Usually in every market, there's one station that does go live 24/7. A lot of times that is because they are the EAS primary station responsible for, if EAS gets activated, they got to do something there. But that's usually the case. Sometimes it's not, but quite often it is.
Okay, so what advice would you have for any young up-and-coming and aspiring disc jockey that wants to get into the radio business? I saw your Webmaster's Corner blog, so go ahead and chill it out.
Well, if you really want to break into the business, first off, a college education isn't necessary. I wouldn't recommend going to a broadcast school. Not because they don't give out, you know, decent information. I'm sure they do. But you can get involved in the ground floor at a radio station a number of different ways. You could go on an internet station and hone your skills and make an air check tape. You could go to a radio station and volunteer to be part of their street team. And they'll probably let you, over time, go into the studio in the production room and practice. And maybe you'll get a part-time gig. But understand that people breaking into radio, you're going to start at the bottom. And the bottom, in all reality, is either free or it's going to be minimum wage, and it's probably going to be part-time. So start off with another job and just do radio part-time. If you're good enough, they'll put you on the air full-time.
Or if you're going to school, I feel college radio is another good starting ground.
I think college radio is a good starting ground, and I think college radio actually has some of the more creative programming that there is out there. Because the programming is blocked off well enough, so you have a number of, as you well know, the jocks can do pretty much what they want. You really can become a personality on college radio. You have to be in college to do it. That's something you can try, but I would only do that if you're already in college with a major of some sort. I wouldn't recommend, you know, evolving your education around radio. Television's a different story. You do need the training for television.
Yeah, because like me, I had my own show for 5 years running, ever since I was a freshman, 5 years.
Well, that's good. So you've got some longevity.
Yeah, and sadly, it's about to come to an end. May the 8th, this be my last show of the Time Machine, and I'm going to miss it. And, all the people I've interviewed in the past 5 years, it's just been mind-boggling.
Well, keep the air check tape. Send me some, okay?
I will do that. And do you have any people you'd like to thank before we conclude?
Oh, goodness. I could thank so many people, in the industry. I'll tell you who he's not listening, but my old program director, Matt Albritt. He's down in Savannah, Georgia these days. He's a man who gave me a huge break at Froggy 94 in Memphis. Greg Mazingo gave me a break at Kix 106 in Memphis, Tennessee. Also in Memphis, Lance Balance, who's moved on to other things. He was the PD at FM 100 there. I just had such a great time. Dick Bartridge, who gave me my start in radio, and I could thank every contributor that has ever sent anything to airchecks.com because they're really doing me a big favor. Let's make sure everybody can get to the site. It's AIRCHEXX.com because if you spell it correctly, it goes somewhere else.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Time Machine exclusive. Steve West, creator and founder of the Radio Classic Airchecks website, airchecks.com. Mr. West, thank you for doing this interview and hang on the line.
All right, thank you very much, and good luck to you as you continue your career. Hope to hear you on the radio somewhere.
Thank you very much. All right.